There's two sides to your day. You read your emails acá, answer them allá, and when dinner time comes, you're back home. That's why you need AT&T Go Phone, a plan that follows you when you go between Mexico and the U.S.
Visit your AT&T store and ask about the Go Phone plan that gives unlimited talk, text, and data usage between the U.S. and Mexico with the first 4 gigabytes of data at high speed. All for $55 a month when you enroll in auto refill. No annual contracts or credit check. AT&T, mobilizing your world. Service may be terminated if voice or text usage in Mexico exceeds 50% for 3 consecutive months. Monthly rate plan charge is $60. $5 discount applied upon enrollment in auto refill. Data usage exceeding the high speed allowance will result in reduced data speed of up to 128 kilobits per second for the rest of your 30-day term. Subject to GoPhone plan terms and terms of service. Coverage and service not available everywhere. Roaming service not guaranteed. Limited coverage in select markets in Mexico. Other restrictions apply. Pricing subject to change. See store for details.
You've been listening to Awakening Spirituality in Business Today with Dan. Welcome to Awakening Spirituality in Business Today, inspiring you to succeed with all your heart and soul. Your hosts today are Daniel Gutierrez, international business consultant, motivational speaker, and best-selling author, and Johnny Hernandez, proven business executive, passionate life and business coach, and founder of Living with Purpose, whose mission is to inspire teams and individuals to achieve their personal and professional best. Together, they'll light the path to help you achieve your absolute best. Without further ado, let's turn it over to Daniel and Johnny for today's illuminating discussion.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. Well, it appears we had a little technical difficulty this morning here, this afternoon here, but welcome. Looks like we made it through it all right. Today's conversation, the disease of indifference to others. This is where each leader thinks only of himself or herself and loses the sincerity and warmth of genuine human relationships. This can happen in many ways. When the most knowledgeable person does not put that knowledge at the service of less knowledgeable colleagues or employees, when you learn something and then keep it to yourself rather than sharing it in a helpful way with others, when out of jealousy or deceit you take joy in seeing others fall instead of helping them up and encouraging them along. Well, welcome myself. Today I am very blessed to have as a co-host Robert Stevens, the famous founder of Geek Squad, the renowned entrepreneur and inspirational leader. Good afternoon, Robert.
Hey, Johnny. How are you?
I'm doing awesome, man. Well, thanks for coming along with us here today.
What is your PhD in?
It's leadership. Leadership.
Oh, okay. Dr. Hernandez, I presume.
Right. So it's great to have you, Robert, and it's interesting, especially this conversation, and it was just, I mean, the timing couldn't be more perfect, Robert. You and I were having a conversation yesterday about ideating and the quality of ideas and networking and the level of engagement, and it's interesting because when I think of, like, the conversation we're having here today, when it talks about, you know, out of jealousy or deceit, you take joy in seeing others fall, well, or in other situations where you just don't share, let's just say, a great idea, process, procedure, system, or whatever, for fear of seeing someone else either out-execute you, out-performing. And I can tell you, in the old retail work, when we used to, in a multi-unit environment, we used to joke about that. You know, you would innovate and you'd come up with a new process of which would help make you more profitable or in one way, shape, or form, help you show up in a little stronger suit on a scorecard or something. And ultimately what you would do is they'd say, well, have you shared this yet? And there was always like a running joke where you'd say, well, I really need to make sure that, you know, I vet everything out and work out all the bugs and before I pass it on to someone else. When tongue in cheek, what you were doing is you wanted to ride that wave as long as you can before you could share the idea. But I have to believe, especially in your space, for Pete's sakes, I mean, talk about technology and new ideas and, you know, Silicon Valley and all that. I mean, you have to see an immense amount of this, don't you?
Yeah, you can say that. I mean, things change pretty quickly, but I think people are starting to experience that in their own jobs now. In the old days, computers were in one realm, and you could, if you weren't in that realm, then, you know, whether you're a bus driver or a fry cook or a plumber, I mean, you know, didn't matter much. But now technology is really finally broken out of that box, and it there's no industry it doesn't touch or affect.
It's just fascinating to me. And so how do you, I mean, I don't know, I'm assuming, have you been a victim of it? I mean, obviously you've witnessed it in your lifetime. I mean, the type of damage that does to long-term relationships and especially in an environment where there's just so much publicity around it. I think, it, you know, when we think of all the new innovations coming out, I mean, is it in pockets? Do you see it broadly across your industry? Or do most people play well together?
People tend to just, you know, obey their own natures. So, you know, I don't believe people are inherently, you know, evil or anything like that. Nobody wakes up in the morning trying to be disruptive. They just are using the skills they grew up with and have experienced. And, you know, like, I believe everybody is curious about something, but not, you know, people aren't curious about everything. So, you know, a leader that is not curious, that's going to affect the rest of the organization. So sometimes you've got to fire yourself. You got to be like, you know, some people complain about their job all the time.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, you got to kind of decide, you know, what are you going to do about it? I mean, it's always easy to find people to blame. The mark of a, you know, a good leader is you can get great things out of good people. The mark of a great leader is you can get great things out of, you know, people who aren't performing at their best, you know.
Yep. And I think that that's interesting because the more you're around, and it's kind of crazy too, because if you think of leaders and, you know, you and I have a history together and you think of some of those leaders you've seen struggle, and that's not always the case. In a lot of cases, these leaders started out very, very strong, getting very strong results, very collaborative with their teams. And it seemed like the further up we'll just call it the ladder, the hierarchy that they ascended, the more they started forgetting about the importance of the collaborative dialogue. Or in some cases, quite frankly, they're just so darn time poor that, you know, and they're stuck in meetings or conversations or whatever, that they don't take the time, they don't have the systems or the processes to actually go out there and gather the insights for those who actually, you know, reside closest to the client or the consumer, depending on whatever business there is. And sometimes it could be misperceived that you know, uninterest can be misperceived as not caring or you know, maybe the arrogance versus the fact that, you know, they're just not organized enough. It's not that they don't value their leaders. It's just they don't have a system in place to go out and procure the information. But how much of it do you think is that versus, you know, most of us have our hair on fire and we're running from one thing to the next each day?
Probably a little of both. I mean, I would say a universal issue is, you know, when you feel like you're in the zone, you're in the groove, and you're in total harmony with the universe, that's usually because you know what you need to do, and you do it.
Right.
A lot of companies struggle, and thereby people struggle, because the company doesn't know who it is, or it's trying to be something that it's not, or it hasn't been explicit about what its goal is. You know, does General Mills, do they sell cereal? Are they in the cardboard business? Are they in the cornflakes business? Or are they in the marketing business? One could argue they're a marketer. So, you know, you as an individual, you have to say, why am I here? What role do I have? Are you at your own capacity? Is the company pushing you hard enough? Is it the right company for you? But the first thing is, you know, the responsibility is on the leader, the CEO, the founder, to first say, first of all, what business are we in? Because once you know who you are, then it gets a bit easier. What process do we use? And finally, what people? What kind of people? You know, when I started Geek Squad, I knew I needed a certain kind of person. I need people who are curious. They love technology, but they also love helping people. That's a big difference in the IT industry. There's a lot of IT people who love the technology who do not like dealing with people. So once I knew who I was and what I wanted the company to be, it was pretty easy to filter out people. That's why when you see a Geek Squad agent, they wear those clip-on ties. That's a physical filter. There's a lot of people who are like, I'm not dressing like that. Well, then go work somewhere else, because I need people who don't really have egos. I need people who are friendly and love to help people. So I kind of learned that just by accident.
Yeah, but I think another thing, and we've got a caller here we'll go to in just a minute, but one of the things I would call out there, though, Robert, that I've always appreciated and admired about you was you've never pretended to have all the answers. And when you think about the topic today, I mean, that's really what it's about. It's the vulnerability. It's the humility. It's to be an open-minded to better ideas. And I think you've always been, in my opinion, a very strong model, and at least from that leadership behavior. So I commend you for that. So let's take a call here real quick. So
hold on.
Go ahead.
I'm a three-time college dropout, and I got average scores on my SATs. So if I were like a brilliant concert violinist and I had straight A's, I'd probably be a total know-it-all jerk. But because I'm really expert at nothing, master of, you know, many, you know, semi-generalist about many things, I would say that frees me up to kind of pursue areas because I'm not particularly great at any one thing.
And again, humble, like I said. Carl, are you there? Hello, is our caller there?
Hi, yes. I'm here, and it's awesome to be on your show again and listen to you guys and what you guys have to share with us. Robert, I have a question for you, and I love hearing you speak. I love kind of your philosophy as well as your humbleness. If you were to think of leadership in this space, what do you think are the top traits or characteristics to be successful as a leader, but also as a leader empowering people to step into the culture that you're trying to create?
Well, I think curiosity is the most important trait in the 21st century. You know, in the 20th century, Peter Drucker talked about the knowledge worker. Well, now I would say it's about the knowledge seeker, because, you know, as we had an information economy, people work with information rather than physical things. And now it's really about your ability to find information, because you don't need to know anything per se, right? So it's kind of like a search engine. Once you're a leader, you have to be less married to how to do things as versus be curious about people, because you're really going to be relying on everyone else to act out the needs of the company. And so being curious about people is one of the secrets. And it's the hardest, but it can be the most gratifying, because people are deep, complex mysteries. Everybody really is a snowflake. And it's a full-time job. I mean, a CEO's job really is to kind of point in the right direction, but also to be recruiting the right leaders. And that's very hard. And so I would say curiosity is the most important thing, and then curiosity for people. Because once you're curious about people, then you don't make judgments about people. You don't say that person's a jerk or that person doesn't have curiosity. They might either just be in the wrong role, but they might have just the wrong idea in their head, and they need a leader to help them get through that.
I think that's insightful, Robert. Actually, and I think that's – and I don't think I've ever heard that example used that each one of us are snowflakes. When we talk about – you know, the importance of diversity, and I think so many people, you know, have labeled it the difference between, you know, black, white, yellow, whatever the case may be, when in fact diversity really is what you've just defined it. You know, it's those things that make each one of us unique and beautiful, and every single soul on the face of the universe has something to contribute, and it's just finding that sweet spot for them. So thank you very much, caller. We're going to jump to our next caller here.
Hey, I want to say one thing real quick, though, about that last point. There's a quote there are two quotes that I think say that really well. Because I was kind of joking about the snowflake because it's kind of like a cliche thing, but it unfortunately seems to be true. But Socrates said, be kind to everybody you meet, because for inside, each person is fighting a great battle. And what I take from that is that it's very easy to reduce people to flat stereotypes and silhouettes and two-dimensional characters. To the person that's mumbling to themselves walking down the street, to the jerk at the Burger King who got your order wrong. And everybody is fighting a battle. The older you get, the easier it gets to see that and be kind. I would say my goal in life now going forward is really just to be kind, because that takes the greatest patience. The other quote that's really good is what Lincoln said. Lincoln said, I really dislike that man. I must get to know him better. And I think that's like an extension of what Socrates said, which is that anytime somebody is bugging the shit out of you, you know, just take it on yourself as a challenge of saying you probably, if some of you're butting heads with at work, you just don't like their style, just everything about them rubs you the wrong way. And just challenge yourself to say first that you just need to get to know them better.
I love that. I absolutely love that. I think that's beautifully put. Caller, are you there?
Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Good. Robert, Johnny, this is Fred. How are you?
We're fantastic, Freddie.
Good. I just wanted to call in and I just jumped on a few minutes ago. Robert, I have a question for you. When you talk about staying true to your vision and, your true north, as far as when Geek Squad and Best Buy came together, how did you really keep it together so your visions would stay alive as you merged into a larger company at Best Buy? I think it's just incredible because you and I met when you came to Birmingham, Alabama, and it's just like you had the following you had with all the agents was incredible, and they hung on every single word. How did you keep that alive through the whole journey at Best Buy with Geek Squad?
Well, thank you. That's very kind. And in your question, see, it assumes that I did something. But in reality, first regarding the Geek Squad agents, Geek Squad really, to me, I designed like a comic book, not unlike a Marvel superheroes movie. I gave them a costume. I gave them a character to play. And unlike the movies you go to, these people get to be superheroes every day. So that desire is within them. All I did was create a stage for them to do that. So when you design a process, actually, you can either try and script everything, but people eventually are just going to go off script. But if you just create the environment for it to occur, that's a lot more robust. With Best Buy, I chose them. I knew, I started Geek Squad in 94. I knew within 6 months that Geek Squad could be a global brand, but I also knew that Best Buy was going to be number one at what they did. Their stores were just cleaner and brighter, thanks to people like Johnny. They did their own advertising. They made their own logo. They were actually born out of a tornado. This is a company created by an act of nature that's had at least 3 near-death experiences. So Best Buy had a unique culture. So I can't actually do anything. The Geek Squad would not have worked in Target. Geek Squad would never have worked with CompUSA. Geek Squad never worked with Circuit City. So I actually didn't do anything. I just picked them. And my strategy when I went to Best Buy is I said, listen, I'm either going to do a deal with you or I'm just going to have to stay independent. You can't marry everybody in the world. There's probably only a few people in the world you could fall in love with. But also, I knew Best Buy was going to be number one in 1995, but I didn't call Best Buy for 5 more years because I wasn't ready. Same reason I didn't get married when I was 22. I wasn't ready. I didn't get married till tomorrow will be my 11th wedding anniversary, so I didn't get married till my 30s. So waiting till the time was right was one thing. Two, even when I called Best Buy, we dated for 2 years before we got married. And even after that, I developed a relationship with a guy named Sean Skelly inside Best Buy, and he and I developed a friendship and partnership that we still have to this day. And so we realized our roles. We used to joke that I was Batman and he was Bruce Wayne. He was a mild-mannered guy who had to go to all the boring meetings for me at Best Buy, and I was the one that got to run around with the cape. So I couldn't have done what I did without Sean and without everybody else at Best Buy. But I would say, number one, I chose the right partner. I took my time, and I really didn't talk myself into a situation. I really actually spent 2 years trying to talk myself out of doing a deal with Best Buy. And I think all those factors are one of the reasons why that partnership still exists today.
Yeah, that's amazing. I have one more question.
I think it's – go ahead,
yeah,
Fred. Go ahead.
No, I just have – go ahead.
My follow-up question to you, Fred, was, so it's been a while. Robert, how long has it been now? Which, by the way, congratulations on your 11th wedding anniversary tomorrow, man. That's cool. That's wonderful, actually, especially in today's day and age. It's something to be proud of. Fred, so Robert, you left how long ago? How long ago did you retire from Best Buy?
3 years.
3 years ago, right? So Fred, you're still interact with the organization on a frequent basis. So what's it like without Robert there now? Do you think I'm not challenging the brand of Best Buy or anything, but I mean in terms of the employees, right? When we talk about those who are still wearing the white shirts and the black ties, is it, do you still see the same level of passion? Do you still see Robert and all that? Or how have you seen things transition since Robert's exit?
A great question. And I remember what it was like, and to your point, the way it is now, the culture has been so diluted over the years, and it's changed. And you know, part of being part of Geek Squad right now, it's different. And trying to bring back that culture, because there's some agents that have been in that work for a long, long time, right? And you see that they want that really bad, and trying to bring that back is just because it's such a wide variety of time and role, right? So you have some agents that have done it a long time. They understand the culture, and just trying to bring that back. There's just a big disconnect, and I think that's what we need to get back. And trying to get the orange book out and going through all the Geek Squad culture, asking those culture questions and trying to bring that have that alive again is what really makes the difference with the client experience and the employee experience, quite frankly.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you. You had one more question, Fred?
I did. Robert, I just have a question. So 10 years from now, give me your vision for technology. What's that going to look like?
Smaller, faster, cheaper, just like it always has been. Technology actually can be a lot more invisible. Right now, if you go to the bus stop or you walk around the city, everybody's got their head planted down on their phone. I think that's a temporary thing. I think technology is in the course of disappearing, blending into the pocket, onto your watch. You know, screens are going to be everywhere, and they're going to be nowhere. That's why the best way to predict the future is read a lot of history, because you know, Mark Twain said history doesn't repeat, but it certainly rhymes. So you'll see echoes of today and yesterday 10 years from now. But, you know, we still are going to have 10 fingers, 10 toes, 24 hours in a day, 2 eyeballs, and only so much attention. And we're not going to have 100 more friends on Facebook. I think, you know, in fact, the status in the future won't be having to look at your phone all the time. So we've only had social networking for a little over 10 years. So it's incredibly new. I mean, the steam engine was around decades before it found itself inside a train. So we don't really know what that means, but that's why it's important to stay curious. But I think the thing I'm watching most right now is sensors. There's about 16 sensors inside your phone. So in 10 years, there's going to be many more sensors, blood glucose monitoring, a lot more health, you know. That's kind of easy predictions. But I think we're going to see a lot more information. You're going to get a lot more data, but it's not going to be overwhelming you. Things like if you have a second home, you know, you'll be able to prevent your pipes from freezing and your grandma from falling down the stairs, because she'll probably have a robot in her home by then that will help her up and down the stairs, help her. Because I think people want to live in their own homes longer, and robotics, healthcare, and home automation are three areas I think that are going to probably be some of the biggest categories.
Robert, I have a question here for you. Let me jump in here for you. So first of all, and thanks for calling in, Fred. So Robert, as you talk about all of this, and I know that you personally stay very, very close to what's happening, and I'm fascinated actually how you stay so close to what's happening in the technology space. And I get you are the king geek, if there ever is such a thing. And so, but my question is, how are we managing all of this? I mean, that's probably the wrong word. With so much innovation and so much ideation taking place, you know, all across the globe, and you know, I think in many cases things are far more collaborative and ideas are being shared. Unlike what you know, we talk about today's disease, but I mean, how do you filter all of this? I mean, this is something you do on a regular basis, and when I think about you know, in an environment that historically has been somewhat very covert or keeping things close to the vest because you don't want to share the wealth, you don't want to share the idea, you don't want to share the glory. I mean, I believe personally what I'm seeing is exactly the opposite taking place, at least in the technology space, where more people are sharing thoughts, ideas, and coming together to make things better. I mean, am I accurate? Am I pie in the sky? Or what do you know to be the truth?
You're going to have more information, but it won't come at you like in a firestorm like it does now. It's going to be a lot more intelligent, because remember, your phone now knows your calendar, so it knows where you are now, and it knows where you need to be in an hour. And it also has access to traffic data and maps, so it can look ahead and say, you know, hey, you better leave 10 minutes early because there's an accident on the highway and I've got a different route for you. Oh, and by the way, you know, there's a parking ramp there that has about 10% availability, so I've held the spot for you. So this idea, you're going to be able to do more with less. Because, you know, if you let Google read your email, they already manage your Gmail, you let it read it, and it can find in there your airline ticket and have it pop up in your inbox the day of your flight. So, you know, it can already kind of auto-detect, like, packets tracking. So the idea is that up until now, all our little technologies in our life were isolated and couldn't talk to each other. Now they can talk to each other, and because of that, they can watch for us in the background. And the future is not automation, but anticipation.
Interesting. So I know we got about 5 minutes left, but I have to ask you. So as you see this transition, as you see this evolve, you talked about being, you know, one of the keys to leadership is curiosity. And much of, you know, the leadership and let's just say, you know, the big fortune companies out there today maybe have more, and I'm speaking very broadly here, so take it as intended, but have more of a legacy type leadership or model, let's just say. What's going to have to be different about the leader from what we've seen, the environments you and I grew up in, versus, you know, these 5-10 years from now? And so you've mentioned curiosity, but how is that going to be reshaped because of technology and the way these companies are being designed and built now?
You know, I think that one of the biggest problems going on right now is a lot of companies think that they're in one business, but they're really not. Most companies are going to have to become software companies. Software really is eating the world. And software is abstract, and not everybody is very good at dealing with abstractions. They need concrete things in front of them, and that's going to be a challenge. So I think the reason a lot of companies are not being, most companies are not innovative right now is because they truly do not understand. It's not an age thing. It's a curiosity thing. I experienced that. I saw a lot of leaders who, the day the iPhone announced, didn't think it was that big of a deal. And then the iPad came out. They didn't think that was big of a deal. And they didn't understand. They thought there was a difference between what business they were in and what trend was happening. And the only way to do that is to live like a consumer. But this is what's different from before. In the old days, you had to be a geek to understand this stuff. Now you don't. You, in your pocket right now, you have a supercomputer connected to a world cloud of information with payments. If you haven't used Apple Pay, you should be using it because you can't come up with new ideas unless you live like a consumer in the now and in the future. So you should be, it doesn't mean you have to be on Snapchat or like it, but you have to understand why is it a thing. And if you're not curious enough to ask that question, then step out of the way.
Interesting. That's actually, you know, because you hear so many people, you know, you call it techno stress or call it whatever you want, they avoid it at all expense, and they'll say, well, I'm on Facebook, so that's enough. And then when you start looking at, you know, when then they're say, well, I'm on Twitter, and then I'm on LinkedIn, and all those things are too much. Well, ultimately what you're saying is you've got to go out there, you've got to explore and experience. Otherwise, how can you in any way, shape, or form pretend to be at least current and have any productive insight as to, you know, where your organization, you as an individual or society is going and where it's shaping to. So, well, thank you. That's fantastic. Robert, any other closing thoughts before we jump off today's show?
I don't think so, but thanks for having me on.
You know, it's been crazy because literally, I mean, we could have you on here for hours because so many people would love your insight, and I think we're going to, if it's all right with you, we're going to bring you back in a different form and a different topic. But the one thing I would share with this is that I have been blessed to know Robert for many, many years. And I've said it before, is the one thing that I've always felt about your leadership ability was not just the humility, because he's overwhelmingly one of the most humble individuals I know. And the fact that you're willing to be vulnerable and to allow others to share their ideas, their insights, and their perspectives. And the fact that you take curiosity to the extreme, where you love synergizing and working with others. So it's been absolutely my pleasure, And I want to thank you for joining us. And next week, folks, Daniel will be back from Peru. We'll be back on the 12th Disease of Leadership. We'll be in New York City. And we look forward to catching up. In the meantime, God bless you. Have yourselves a wonderful week. And we'll chat soon.
You've been listening to Awakening Spirituality in Business Today with Daniel Gutierrez and Johnny Hernandez. To provide feedback, listen to more episodes, or learn how Daniel and Johnny can help you in your business, visit their websites at livingwithpurpose.today or danielgutierrez.com. You can also call them directly at 1-805-764-1463. Thank you again for listening. The personal fulfillment and professional success you've been searching for is within your reach. Lead with your heart and live a life of purpose today.
Amiga, te tengo tremendo cuento.
If you switch to AT&T, you can get $300 in credits when you buy a Samsung Galaxy S6 on AT&T Next and trade in a smartphone.
Wow, it's amazing.
Why are you whispering so much? What are you talking about?
Great news. Switch to AT&T and get $300 in credits.
What?
Are you serious?
Norma, did you hear? $300 in credits when you switch to AT&T.
Switch to AT&T and get $300 in credits when you buy a Samsung Galaxy S6 on AT&T Next and trade in a smartphone. AT&T, mobilizing your world. Limited time offers. Requires port-in eligible service and trade-in. Get $100 bill credit applied within 90 days and $200 trade-in credit, which may be a promotion card. Fees, other charges, and restrictions apply. See store or att.com/summerbuyback for details.